Now that Wendy's has these new biggie deals, everyone in the family can get what they're craving, from Nugs to JBCs. The parental units can get an $8 biggie bundle, the eldest who think they're so grown can get a $6 biggie bag, and the little one who can do no wrong can get a $4 biggie bites. You know, assuming they have a credit card. No, I'm kidding. We take cash too. $4, $6, and $8 biggie deals for the whole family. Only at Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.
Moncrief on News Talk.
When a road traffic incident takes place, whether it's one in which people are injured or killed or not, we tend to go to the default description of it as an accident. In a piece for the Irish Times, Sive O'Neill argues that this is entirely the wrong term. Sive, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Why is it the wrong term?
Well, my piece is really making the case that the words we use to talk about traffic and road violence, and I'll come back to that term, matters. The words we use can normalise situations that are actually preventable. They frame the problem in a certain way, and they kind of tend to frame it in the Irish, not just the media, but also in general public attitudes, that traffic is normal and to be expected. If the pedestrian or the cyclist gets hurt, they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so the framing of the issue puts the focus on the rights and entitlements and attitudes of some road users over others. But I don't want to make this about, like, it's about being anti-driver. It's really more about thinking about the system, the road system, the way we use public space, the way we think about transport away from getting A to B, in a way that privileges the car, the private motor vehicle, and all the risks that come with that. Because you are, after all, talking about a minimum of 2 tons of metal hurtling down the street at a minimum of 30 kilometres an hour, and usually a lot more than that. So there's an inherent risk once you put a vehicle like that, and obviously, you know, bigger vehicles are even more of a risk, when you put them in contact with the human body. We're just made of flesh and blood, after all, and we don't have any protection. The kinetic energy that builds up when you have traffic moving at speed and then possibly colliding with a human body is the risk that needs to be managed. That's the system's way. And the other thing is, when we talk about accidents, we kind of absolve everyone of responsibility. Now, it's not that the Gardaí don't investigate and sometimes people are brought to court. Obviously, that is the case. But it absolves us from thinking about the pattern to road collisions, why they occur, what the pattern, the statistical factors are. And for example, we know that speeding is a major driver, drink and drug driving, extra large vehicles, SUVs, dangerous junctions, distracted drivers drinking coffee and on their mobile phones, watching videos, eating their breakfast, whatever, and then the street design. So these are all the factors we need to be talking about.
Yeah. Though sometimes they can be accidents. Sometimes someone's tired, or the baby starts crying and you just glance away for a second and you're not being particularly irresponsible. Sometimes that can happen. And as you say, people are driving these 2-ton vehicles. It's almost inevitable some people are going to get hurt.
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. So let's think about aviation. Let's think about flying as another way of getting to this point. We never talk about plane accidents, but obviously pilots make errors. So the reason why aviation has such an incredible safety record is because it expects human error. It absolutely expects it. That's why you always have 2 pilots minimum in the cockpit. And they're designed and they are trained and they are required by law to report incidents where the other pilot isn't doing something right.
Yeah.
They have cockpit measurements and gadgets and whatever to tell them
and
something's
checklists.
Not right, and checklists. So there's no such thing as a plane accident. They have a safe systems approach. And whenever there is an incident, they investigate that thoroughly and they take out the kind of moral culpability. They totally expect that pilots will make an error. And that's not necessarily a problem because you expect it. We're human. But it's how you design the systems to correct for that. So what we have with when it comes to motorized violence is we do not have a safe systems approach. We do not have a way of thinking about, well, was it possible for so many cars to be driving at speed on that road in such a way that there was a heightened risk to pedestrians? Instead of wondering, why was the pedestrian out on that rural road? What were they expecting only cars to be speeding? You know, where's the enforcement? Where's the regulation? We have rules. We have, speed limits. If they're not being adhered to, why haven't we got automated speed cameras? You know, and there is an answer to that, which is that there is a problem at a political level getting the agencies responsible to install them. They do not want to be inundated with fines and court cases. And as a result, we do not have the mechanism to make our roads and streets safer. The technology is there. The political will is absent.
You're saying that if they were installed everywhere, they'd just be, the system couldn't handle that many cases.
Well, I think even if they were installed on national roads and motorways, there would be a challenge to the kind of enforcement. The thing is, so cities like Helsinki embraced this idea of Vision Zero, which we apparently have in Ireland as well, but we're not getting anywhere near zero. Our accidents are, sorry, there I am using the word, our rate of injury and fatality is increasing, actually, by 28% over the last few years. In Helsinki, a city, I think, of about 500,000 people, they had zero road fatalities in 2025. Now, that didn't happen by accident. It happened because they installed cameras. They reduced the speed limit. So the default speed limit in Helsinki is 30 kilometres an hour. We could do the same here. We have the legislation. It just hasn't been implemented. But if it's implemented, that means enforcement. And we've seen a decline in the policing of our traffic quite dramatically in the last 10 or 15 years by about 40%. So we have far fewer Gardaí on the street than would have been the case in about 2010. So you can't expect the cameras to work in isolation. The other thing is they don't all need to be switched on all the time, because that would just generate millions. It would be just overburdening the system. But it needs to be there as a deterrent. It needs to be there that changes people's behaviour.
Mm. Even actually, I must say, I don't drive that much, really, but driving around Dublin, I've sometimes thought, well, I wonder what the speed limit is on this road. There's no sign telling me what it is. And I know it varies from place to place.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the default speed limit for urban areas should be 30 kilometres an hour. But when the road traffic legislation was commenced, it was introduced by the previous government. But when it was commenced over the last year by the current government, it was decided, and I think it was a very bad decision, to require local authorities to introduce the changes to speed limits on a street by street basis or by area. And that has created a lot of delays and confusion and has opened up the whole thing about whether we want to do this or not, when in fact good practice is to just do it. But of course we need the signage then, and we need the awareness campaigns to go with that. Otherwise, as you say, people won't know, and you're relying on your sat-nav type thing to tell you, and that might be wrong.
And going back to the Helsinki example, in fairness, excuse me, is it easier to enforce those kind of restrictions in an urban area, in cities and towns, rather than out in a by road where, you know, it's very difficult because, you know, you might be in the middle of nowhere and no one's going to see you driving at 120 kilometres an hour?
For sure. Enforcement looks very different in different, you know, situations, rural versus urban. And urban includes our cities, but it also includes our villages and towns, because they also need to have this 30 kilometre per hour protection.
Are there stats about incidents, how they divide between rural areas and more urban areas?
Well, most of the incidents involving pedestrians and cyclists happen in urban areas by virtue of the fact that there's more of them in urban areas. About half of the serious injuries and fatalities have occurred in Dublin. Now, Dublin is a bigger city than Helsinki, for sure. But we had 190 fatalities last year. And I can't recall off the top of my head what the number specifically was for cyclists or pedestrians, but it's a decent percentage of that. I think drivers are the highest number. And then after that, you have the vulnerable road users and motorcyclists. So it's a really big cause for worry. And this loss of life is not something we should accept. It's not something we should tolerate. We should be angry and we should be determined to reduce that number, and we should be determined to do whatever it takes to reduce that number, even if it means requiring and forcing people to drive more slowly and to redesign some of those dangerous junctions, because it's left turning trucks and vehicles that are often the biggest hazard to cyclists who are often trapped on the inside of those left turning vehicles. So redesigning those junctions. Now, I have no doubt that local authorities understand this. They are the ones with the traffic engineers. And they're, you know, not resourced well enough to necessarily implement all these things. But I think the way we talk about it in the public domain really matters, because the perception is that there's no public demand for these kind of changes. And I think that is not the case. Nobody wants to see anybody lose their life needlessly, you know.
And to go back where we came in, talking, using the word accident, but you subsequently used the word violence.
Yes.
And in other parts of Europe, that is the word they use.
Yes, it's really interesting. I've just come back from the Velo City Conference, which is an international conference all to do with the joy and the science of cycling, essentially. And we had a lot of sessions on kind of terminology. And the thinking now is to get away from even talking about road safety and to be talking about road injury reduction, because the word safety implies, or it kind of puts the onus on the vulnerable road user, the cyclist or the pedestrian, to change their behaviour. You know, if you want to be safe, you should wear a helmet, you should wear a high vis or something like that. You should not use the Lewis track as if you had any other option. And so road safety campaigns have tended to focus on behavioural change rather than that safe systems approach. So the reason that you might use a word like violence is it's shocking. But we should be shocked. Shouldn't we be shocked that 190 people die on our roads every year and that figure is increasing?
Well, if it was from any other cause, we would be shocked.
Exactly.
But I suppose we've become inured to it because it's just an annual event now.
Yeah. Well, I think we should challenge that assumption, really. And that's why if you use the word violence, like, you know, there's a sort of bit of exaggeration, but it does, you know, trigger a reaction in us. And it's that jolting us awake, I think, that's what language can do if we use it correctly.
Yeah. Saif, thanks very much for coming in to talk to us today. Saif O'Neill there. You can find that piece in the Irish Times.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.